Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahabiryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinapati Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
1, 2, 13, Chapter 7, 2, 13.
Jagrat Swapna Sushupjadi Jagrat Swapna Sushupjadi Prapancham Yat Prakashate Prapancham Yat Prakashate Tad Brahma Hamiti Jnatva Tad Brahma Hamiti Jnatva Sarvabandhaiv Pramuchate Sarvabandhaiv Pramuchate Jagrat Swapna Sushupti Adi Prapancham, one compound. Jagrat Swapna Sushupti Adi Prapancham. Yet Prakashate. Tet Brahma Aham Iti Nyatwa Sarvabandhaihi Pramuchate. In the previous verses, we've had an unfoldment of anvaya vyatireka, right? So the anvaya, and so the anvaya vyatireka is a logic that's used to differentiate the sakshi, the atma, the self, from specifically from the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. But the anvaya vyatireka is used to differentiate really the constant from the things that leave the constant. So anvaya. The anvaya in this logic, the anvaya vyatireka, just a little review for some of you in case you haven't listened to the last classes. The anvaya is the concordance where I would say, when this is, that is. And so there's a relationship. If this thing is, that is. So when this is, that is. That's the anvaya, the positive correlation. The vyatireka is the negative correlation. When this is not, that is not. So if you have an anvaya vyatireka relationship, it shows that there is a definite relationship between the one thing and the other. So if I say when this is, that is, and when this is not, that is not, then there's a definite relationship, dependency between these two things. So for instance, if I say when the day is the sun, when the sun is, the day is, when the sun is up, the day is, when the sun is down, the day is not. Right? That means that the day is dependent upon the sun for its being. So there's a correlation there. But if I were to say, if the anvaya vyatireka breaks down, when this is, that is, when this is not, that still is, then there's no relationship. It may seem as though there is. These two things are coexisting. When this is there, then that is there. Like, for instance, if I use it in reference to my mind, when my thought is, I am. That's the anvaya. When my thought is, I am. In other words, whenever I have a thought, I am always there. Whenever I have a thought, the consciousness is always there. So when the thought is there, the consciousness is there. But the vyatireka would be, when the thought is gone, the consciousness is gone. That would be the vyatireka. And so if that anvaya and vyatireka are both there, then there shows a relationship. But what if you have, when the thought is, consciousness is, but when the thought is gone, consciousness still is. Right? The self still is. Right? So that, if we see that the vyatireka breaks down, then the anvaya is not establishing, you know, a dependency or an inheritance in the relationship. And so this anvaya vyatireka is a teaching methodology that is frequently used to help a student differentiate the Atma, the self, the conscious being, your self experience, from all other experiences. Because all other experiences, by the very nature of Maya, by the very nature of the creation, all other experiences come and go. Right? They come into being, they go out of being. And there's no exception. Within this creation, within duality, all experience comes into being, goes out of being. All experiences that have to do with your perception, all experience that has to do with the nature of the body, with the sukshma sharira, with a subtle body, with all of your thoughts, with all of your moods, with all of your emotions. Even the ahankara comes into being, goes out of being. I am doing this. You're not walking around saying, I. The ahankara also is a vritti that is temporary. And so now all of these experiences that make up my life, right? All of the experiences that make up my life make up me. Because they're all points of identification, right? I am the body, you know, I am tall or I am thin or I am well, I am sick, I am a woman, I am a man. But all of these are points of identification with a physical body where the I is taken to be this. In terms of my experiences of my mind, I am happy, I am sad, I am agitated, I am ecstatic, you know, I am feeling dull, I am smart, I am stupid. Hundreds of millions of points of identification with vrittis, with thought modifications, either emotions or intellections or imaginations or whatever happens, projections, whatever is going on. And so there's this, I am that. That's the anvaya. And you can say, I am that, because when this is, that is. Always. Right? Always. So, for instance, if I say, when the sun is, the day is. Always. There is, the day is never not there when the sun is up. Right? So like that, whenever my mind is there, whenever consciousness is there, I can't have a vritti, a thought, without consciousness. You can't separate them. Here's the consciousness over here, here's the thought over here. And so because they're inseparable, when the one is, the other is, you will, unless the analysis, there's some other analysis to come in, to show you, yeah, but when the one is not, the other still is. Unless that vyatireka breaks down and that type of thinking has come in, you will just think, well, my mind is never without consciousness. And so I, the conscious being, am my mind, because my mind is never without consciousness. Right? And so this type of, there's a conclusion there, because the mind is truly never without consciousness. But we have to recognize that, yes, but the consciousness is without the mind. And if the consciousness, even though the mind is never without consciousness, that shows the satyamitya, because it shows that the mind is totally dependent for its being on consciousness. So the mind is mitya, consciousness is satyam. But the consciousness is not dependent on the mind. Or the emotion is totally dependent for its being on the conscious being. But the conscious being is not dependent on the emotion. I can be perfectly fine without the emotion. So this anvaya vyatireka, that first of all, the logic of it has to be understood, and then that logic has to be applied. And so in this few verses ago, he introduced anvaya vyatireka. And now he's building upon this and using it in the prakriya. A prakriya, the teaching methodology that is often used for anvaya vyatireka, is called the avastha trayasakshi. Avastha means the state of experience. It's an avastha. Traya means the three states of experience. So if I were just to say the avastha traya, it means the three states of experience, waking, dream, deep sleep. It's just a technical term. Avastha traya, the three states of experience, waking, dream, deep sleep. Now, the prakriya, the teaching methodology, is called this. The avastha trayasakshi. Who is the witness, the sakshi, of the waking, dream, and deep sleep? How to arrive at the witness, at the self, the conscious being, the one who is the self of the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state. The logic, the methodology that's used to arrive at the sakshi of waking, dream, deep sleep, is this anvaya vyatireka. And so he's talked some about this, and the logic goes like this. When the waking state is, I am. But when the dream state is, which has negated the waking state, because when the dream state is there, the waking state is not there, in my experience. So when the waking state is, I am. But when the dream state is, I still am. The waking state is no longer. But I, in terms of my experience. So in the waking state is, I am. But when the dream state comes along, negating the waking state, I still am. Right? So that vyatireka, when the waking state is, I am, there can't be a waking state without me. But when the dream state comes along and negates the waking state, I still am, and there can't be a dream state without me. Right? Deep sleep state comes along and it negates the waking state and the dream state. But it can't be the dreams, the waking, the deep sleep state can't be there without me. Because when I awake from the dream state, the deep sleep state, when the waking state and the dream state come back, you know, when the waking state comes back, then I say, I am the one who had a deep sleep. At that time, I didn't know anything. I'm the one who is present to the deep sleep state. So I don't lose my existence in the deep sleep state, even though there's no running commentary. The mind isn't going, I'm deep sleeping now. The mind is in unmanifest condition. But I'm still the one present, the conscious being, but it also negates any type of knowership or enjoyership on the part of the Atma. Because in the deep sleep state, there's no enjoyership or knowership. So any experience that can be negated, that you can be without, is not you. That's the vyatireka, right? When it is, it can be totally dependent on you. But when it's gone and you're still there, there's no dependence for yourself. You're asanga. That's what we mean by asanga. Asanga means non-attached. It means that your being is not dependent, your self-experience, your being, is not dependent on the other, you know, at all, in any way whatsoever, for its being. Because I can be without it. What is core to your experience, to who you are, will always be there. The self-experience is not something negatable. If you can have a negatable experience, if there's an experience that can be, and which can go, and you still remain, then that experience isn't inherent. It isn't your nature. So Anvayavyatireka is very powerful, so he's spending some time on it. See, here, in this verse, what he says, having now done three verses talking about this, the Anvayavyatireka relationship, which I've just kind of summarized for you, now he goes like this. He says, Jagrat is the waking state, Swapna, the dream state, Shushupti, the deep sleep state, Adi, means etc. Prapancham. The prapancha, the universe, the prapancha, which is composed of what? The waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, and any other states you want to throw in there. So that which begins with the waking state, the deep sleep state, the dream state, etc. This prapancha, yet prakashate, yet prakashate tad brahma aham iti. It goes like this. I am that Brahman. Tad brahma aham. I am that Brahman, that infinite self. Yet prakashate, which illumines. I am that Brahman, which illumines the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, the entire creation. I am that Brahman which illumines the creation, beginning with the waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. Iti jnatva, having known that, sarva bandhaihi pramuchyate, one is liberated from all bondage. Having recognized that I am the one, I am that Brahman which illumines the universe, the prapancha, beginning with the waking, dream, and deep sleep state, having realized that, I am liberated from all bondage. That's the verse. Okay, so, let's just look at what's being said here. In my experience, as a jiva, as a waker, I take myself to be a conscious being, and I've identified myself as the knower of this creation. Right? That's where I start. I'm a conscious being. And everybody will say that, yes, I'm a conscious, existent being, and I take myself to be this waker, this body, mind, sense organs, with sense organs perceiving this physical world. That's my, the totality of my experience. I can even break it down as to my experience as the knower, knowing, known, and the objects of knowledge, right? And I am the knower, and this is my known world. So the ahankara now belongs, the I notion belongs to this body, mind, sense organs complex who knows this world. Now, in this, this is the totality of my experience, the knower and the known, right? So if I want to look at, okay, what am I, at, right now at this moment, what am I experiencing? Well, I'm experiencing myself, and I'm experiencing myself, the conscious being, as the knower of this creation. So now I've encompassed the totality of my experience. Okay? So we accept that experience. But now we say, but in the dream state, in that state, there, what is the totality of your experience? Well, I am the conscious being who is the knower of this dream world. Then that's the totality, right? I am now the knower of the dream world. In the waking state, the totality of my experience is I am the conscious being who is the knower of the waking state. In the dream state, I say, I am the conscious being who is the knower of the dream state, right? So the conscious being is the only thing in this waking dream, the passage from the waking state to the dream state, actually, that remains the same. The knower, the body, mind, sense organs of the waking state is different than the dream character who is the knower of the dream state. So the knower and the knower known that belongs to the waking state is negated by the knower known that belongs to the dream state. And yet, I am the conscious being who is the knower of the waking state, and I am the conscious being who is the knower of the dream state. So there's only one thing that has what we call an anuvritti, one thing that actually passes from the waking state to the dream state in terms of experience. Or don't go into thinking, well, actually the body is still there, it's in deep sleep. Don't think on that level. Because what we're trying to point to is the actuality of your experience. What is aproksha? What is immediately present to you in your experience? In the waking state, what is immediately present to you is the aproksha, the self-evident conscious me, and whatever I'm perceiving, know or known. Dream state, what is aproksha? What is immediately evident to me? Conscious being, and then the knower known of the dream. What we're saying is the knower known of the dream negates the knower known of the waking. When the one is present, the other is not present. Right? When the dream state is there, the waking state is not there, not in my experience. But there is no question that the dreamer is the waker. The self of the dreamer is the self of the waker. So, since that is the reality of my experience, I need to take note. Who is it that passes through? Who is the constant? Right? Now, look at the deep sleep state, the shushupti. So, jagrat means waking. You know, swapna is dream. Shushupti is deep sleep. In the shushupti, in the deep sleep state, we don't have a waker in a waking world. We don't have a dream character in a dream world. The duality is, in fact, unmanifest. There is no experience of knower known. There is no manifestation of the ahankara. There's no manifestation of a bhokta, an enjoyer, the one who says, oh, I'm having the most, this is fantastic, this deep sleep, it's so relaxing. Non-dual Advaita, I love it. Nobody's saying that, it's just the reality. Right? Nobody's commenting on it. Right? So, no ahankara, no I notion, no knower known, no enjoyer, just being my being, the me, with the undercurrent of the mind in complete ajnanam. It's what we would say, like a prolonged, I don't know anything without the words. And then, and so there's no commentary going on, there's no time, there's no perception of time, no perception of duality, no passage of time. And if there's a liminal passage of time, it means you're partially awake. For there to be a passage of time, there has to be a perception of duality. Like you can be partially awake to your body, be very comfortable, but you're not in deep sleep. If you're in deep sleep, then the mind isn't cognizing time, because to cognize time means to cognize duality. Click, 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 click. That's duality, right? And so, when you wake up from that deep sleep state, the antakarana, the mind that has been in a causal condition, right, now is awake again. It's not in its causal, unmanifest condition, it's awake. But whether it's in causal, when it's in causal condition, we say that condition is what we call an episukshmavritti. Means it's a thought modification which is very subtle because it's not, there's no manifestation of duality. The vritti is still there. The antakarana, the mind is still there. Otherwise, you can't wake up, right? The jiva upadhi can't wake up and then say, oh, I had a deep, good, deep sleep. So the mind has to be there, but it has to be an unmanifest condition. When the mind wakes up, then it is going, no, it can comment on the condition. It can talk and talk about it. I could go on and on about what deep sleep is like, even to be able to say, well, let me describe it for you. When I'm in deep sleep, there is no experience of duality. I am just with myself without any commentary, you know? And I can say nothing interrupts me. There is no passage of time. There's just a big I don't know vritti. Nothing is known at that time. So now, what am I doing when I'm awake? The mind is now describing the condition of deep sleep. It's a memory. I'm describing that condition. And I can go on to describe, I also had the most interesting dream. You know? And this is what the dream was about. What am I doing? Memory. I'm describing a condition of the mind. Right? And that's the dream state. And then I can even say, well, that dream is so interesting. You know what I was doing the day before. Now what am I doing? I am describing my prior day through recollection of vrittis, of memories. And then I can just, so I'm describing the waking state. And I say, you know, I went to bed at about 10 or 11. Such a deep sleep. But in the early morning, I had this dream, and I woke up from the dream. And this is what the dream is. So I'm describing these conditions, right? And even the waker who's describing the dream state was not describing the dream state when the dream state was happening, unless it's some sort of a lucid dream and going back and forth from the waker to the... But you're describing your vrittis, okay? But the point here, just to kind of give you the territory here, the point is that no matter what the condition, waking state, dream state, deep sleep state, all of which negate each other. The dream is here, waking is not, deep sleep, neither dream or waking, but they negate each other. There is somebody who's not negated, and that is me. I am the one for who is the waker, who is the dreamer, who is the deep sleep, who is the deep sleeper. I have no, I would not ever say that, oh, you know, I went to sleep and then somebody had a dream last night and then I woke up. Who in the hell was that? Yeah. There was a deep sleep. Deep sleep happened to somebody last night. Yeah. No, it was me. So my being is there present to all but asanga. Asanga. So when we say asangoham, in fact, when we do contemplation, this asangoham, 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 means my being, the Atma, is the Sakshi, means it's asanga, it's not attached. It is there as the Satyam, is the very self of the waker, the self of the dreamer, the self of the deep sleeper, But it doesn't come and go with the waker and the dreamer and the deep sleeper. Otherwise, when the waker goes, I would go. Somebody else would come in the dream. But I don't go. I'm the constant, and that's why, and I'm totally unattached, which is why, you know, the alarm goes off and your dream explodes. You're gone. You could be caught in the most vivid, the most numinous dream, most complex, brilliant, real dream. And something wakes you up, the alarm or whatever, you know. And that vivid reality disappears. And whoever you are totally identified with and totally engaged in your dream life, all disappears. You've died. The dream character has died, is gone. But in fact, you can say that, but in fact, nobody has died. The dream character is gone, nobody has died. The self of the dream character remains untouched. So we can say the dream character has died, but there's been no death. Because the truth of the dream character is the asanga atma. The truth of the waker. When you go from the waking state into the dream, there is no waking universe. The waker has died. No. The waker has not died because the waker is Brahman. The truth of the waker, who you actually are, is Brahman. And so of course you haven't died, you're a sangha. There has not been any, not the slightest ripple of change in your being. And so in fact there is, the experience of death is not, there's no such thing. There can be incredible changes of experience, but not experience of death, because the self is not subject to death, it's not subject to change, it's asanga, it's totally unattached. It's the self of the experience, but it is not dependent on the experience. That's the whole satyam mitya. And so here it says, the one who recognizes, having known, that I am that Brahman, I the Atma, this self, am Brahman. Why do they say Brahman? It's because Brahman, when I say Brahman, it means the self which is infinite. I have recognized myself, that this Atma, this is the Mahavakya, I recognize that I, this conscious being, that I am Brahman. That's the Aham Brahmasmi. That's the Mahavakya of the whole, all of the Upanishads. I am Brahman. Means that my self is the self which lights up the entire universe. Just as I am the self that lights up the whole dream creation, right? I am the Ishwara of the dream creation. I am Brahman in reference to the dream creation. But because I am a Sangha, I am the one that lights up the waking state. And because I'm neither the waker, the knower or the known. I'm a sangha to both. The knower and the known both belong to the waking state. As we'll see in the next verse, the dreamer and the dreamt both belong to the dream state. As the sakshi, I am the one that lights up the waker and the waking world. I am the one that lights up by the waker I mean the knower, you know, the jiva within the waking world. And I am the one that lights up the dream jiva within the dream world. And I am the one that lights up the deep sleep. Therefore, I am Ishvara. I am the self of both the knower and the known. And I am a sangha. So the one who knows I am this Brahman who lights up the waking dream deep sleep state, the prapancha, the world, that person is free of all bondage. Because the bondage belongs to the different, the waker, the dreamer, or the deep sleep. There's no bondage really for the deep sleeper because there's no experience of duality. But the problem with the deep sleeper is that he comes back into the waking state. So the core of the jiva is still there. So any type of bondage requires your identification with the jiva the knower in the waking state or the knower in the dream state, that's the one who can have bondage. And does have bondage in the sense that the waker is subject to time, is subject to death, is subject to duality, you know, because it's part and parcel of duality. And so it's going to be subject to all that duality is subject to. Same with the dreamer is also subject to duality. And deep sleeper is subject to duality too, in the sense that it's bound on either side by the waking state and the dream state, within its own little capsulated state, where the ahankara is in causal condition, it's getting a reprieve. Just like for, say, a yogi, or somebody who takes drugs or whatever, can generate a non-dual experience. It's a non-dual experience where the mind, different than the deep sleep state, where the mind is in nirvikalpa samadhi because of pranayama and practice of meditative exercises, you're able to harness the mind and focus it solely and hold it focused solely on awareness. So now the awareness, the conscious being, is illumining a mind that is totally focused and absorbed in awareness. So there, the mind has no other vritti, no other content other than awareness. So awareness is illumining awareness. There's nothing in between. You have a non-dual experience. There's only awareness there, even without the mithya, without the manifestation of the creation. So then you come back from that, and then you say, I had this non-dual experience. This non-dual experience, this is the reality. This non-dual experience is the reality. Unfortunately, it's bordered by duality, you know, like the deep sleep is bordered by duality. I have to get back into that non-dual where the creation is gone. That's yoga. In fact, that is Sankhya yoga. You know? I need to get rid of the prakriti. I need to bring the prakriti, make the prakriti totally unmanifest so it's not perceived by me, so I can just abide as non-dual consciousness. And so people, you know, you can have drug experiences, you can have meditative experiences that give you this reprieve. And sometimes I've said, you know, the deep sleep is like the lazy man's samadhi. You know, just go to sleep. You know, and then there's, for a while, you get that reprieve.
And no duality.
No duality. Or meditate, trying to break out of the world. But that experiential non-duality is time-bound. It's not non-dual, because you can get rid of it. It's not non-dual, because there's something that it isn't. You think when the world comes back, oh, the duality has come back. Then there's something other than the non-dual. The non-dual is bordered by dual. That's not non-dual. There's dual and non-dual. That's two. So this is the problem. So we're in the Anvaya Vyatireka. What are they trying to do now is to identify, just for starters, we're identifying the nature of the one in your experience that is pervasive to your experience as me, the conscious being. Pervasive to the experience, but what is a sangha not attached to the experience. Means I outlast the experience. The experience is I am, the experience is gone, I still am. And that is my reality. Because that's so much the reality, that's why you can say, without any feeling of weirdness, that, you know, I was awake, enjoying the world, I fell asleep, and I had this incredible dream. Well, when that incredible dream was there, there was no waking state, and there was no dream, there was no waker there. But you have no problem, because the sakshi, who you actually are, is neither the waker nor the dreamer. You are the self of the waker and the self of the dreamer. And so there's no discontinuity. There's no loss of self. You can even go into the temporary little non-duality of deep sleep. No problem. Because of the asangatvam of your being. And so this being that you are, it's a matter of viveka. It's a matter of recognition. And the one who recognizes that being recognizes aham brahmasmi. I am the sakshi. I am the conscious being because of which all of these three states are illumined. Myself being free from all of them. Nothing ever happens to me. That's why there's no bondage for me at all, because I'm not touched by waking, dream, deep sleep. I'm not touched by the creation. It has no bond. It has no hold on me whatsoever. In fact, I am its very self. So that's this verse. Then let's do the next one. What's going on with this?
Eka evatma mantavyaha. Eva evatma mantavyaha. Jagrat swapna susuptishu. Jagrat swapna susuptishu. Stana traya vyatitasya. Stana traya vyatitasya. Punarjanma na vidyate. Punarjanma na vidyate. Ekaha eva atma mantavyaha. Jagrat swapna susuptishu. Stana traya vyatitasya. Punarjanma na vidyate. Ekaha eva atma mantavyaha.
This is what has to be realized, mantavyaha, that the atma is only one, ekaha, eva atma, that the self is only one. There is only one self, jagrat, swapna, sushuptishu. In the waking state, in the dream state, in the deep sleep state, there is only one being there. There is only one self there. That self is stana traya vyatitasya, says, for that self, who is jatita, means, atita means beyond, transcends, free of. For that self, which is free of the stana traya, the three stanas, waking, stana means places. The stana traya, the threefold stanas, stana is avasta. So stana traya, so by stana means place. So the one who is a free, totally free, beyond, transcends, asanga. One who is totally free or transcends stanatraya, these three stanas, the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. For that person, punarjanma navidyate, there is no rebirth. That person is not reborn. Right? In fact, so janma means birth. Punar, it means again. Punarjanma navidyate, that person is not, doesn't born again. So, what needs to be realized, mantavyaha, is that there is only one self that is the self of the waking, dream, and deep sleep state. For that self, for that one, who is beyond, who is free of these three states, for that one, there is no rebirth. That person is not born again. Okay, so there's a little twist here that you have to understand. The Atma, yourself, has never been born. Nor has it ever died. So it's not like you gain self-knowledge and all of a sudden you're not going to be born again. Right? As though you ever were born. The Atma, your being, has never been born. It has never died. It's like saying, is the, you know, when you wake up from the dream, are you, all of a sudden you're not, you know, you didn't die. Have you ever died? The Atma has never died. It's never been born. It's never died. In reference to the waking state, the dream state, or the deep sleep state. But for you, the waker, you think you're going to die. The one who is identified with the body, mind, sense organs, the, remember, karya, karana, sangata. I'm going to keep throwing these terms out to you. I get used to them. Karya, karana, sangata. It means the sangata is the complex, the conglomerate of the karya, the physical body, and the karana, the sense organs and mind. Okay? So karya, karana, sangata. The ahamkara, the I notion, is the one who's identified. I am the waker. And this waker, this body, mind, sense organs, is subject to death. And if I were born in India, I would say, I am going to die, and I will be reborn again. Because transmigration is like, as is absolutely taken for granted. Like in the West, for people who have grown up in Christianity, You know, you only know like heaven, hell, and purgatory. And if you're a Christian, that's what you believe in, heaven, hell, and purgatory. You don't know anything else, and if you don't believe in that, you're an atheist. Right? Well, I mean, just imagine, say you're born or you're being held kind of in a Christian community, and you were born believing in God, God in heaven, and you believe in all of just the tenets. You grew up with it from childhood, and your parents grew up with it, and your grandparents, and your great-grandparents, and your whole community. And so what do you know about the afterlife is, well, I either go to heaven or hell, or I can, if you're Catholic, you can go to purgatory, like a temporary place where you have to get rid of some sins, and then you can go to heaven. This is what you know, and if you believe in God, then you accept this. And if you don't believe, in God, you would not accept this. When I die, then I'm just dead. That's it. Or you would say like this, if you were to say, just brought up in the Christian community, what if you were to say to somebody, to a Christian, oh, I don't believe in heaven or hell or purgatory. Then what does that mean? Then you mean you don't believe in God? You know? Or you get a little bit more modern and you could say like this, I don't believe in hell because I don't think God would send people to an eternal hell, so I only believe in heaven. Maybe there's a purgatory, but I can't accept an eternal hell because I can't accept a God like that. So then you have heaven and you believe in heaven and purgatory. What I'm saying is that's the containing myth. In India, the containing myth for thousands and thousands of years was just accepted like breathing. In fact, for 66% of the world population, not just the Hindus, but in the East, for 66% of the world population, the reincarnation of the soul, the transmigration of the soul, is taken for granted. This is one birth among many. And so you would assume, being identified with this kariya karana sangata, this body, mind, sense organs, that, yeah, when this body goes, you will experience some different lokas, some different worlds of experience, punya or papa, and then you will take another birth and go through it all again. You'll experience punya and papa, and so that becomes very, very, very important for you as a jiva, in fact, to live a good life, to live a dharmic life. Because if you don't, what kind of birth are you going to get? You could get a very terrible next birth. So dharma is also very self-serving in not only in this life, because a dharmic life, you have the mind has some composure and some shanti, but it's also protecting your next life. And every Hindu knows this. From childhood, the whole culture is contained with this understanding, and it goes back thousands of years. And so, in fact, it's very, very important, certain understandings about dharma, because you want to get a good next birth and to have positive experiences between the two births. So it's vitally important, not just to your shanti now, so you take it for granted. And you also know that if you are doing a dharma, not only will you pay for that here, you will pay for it later. I mean, there is no such thing as injustice in the long term, in the sense that your adharmas will bear fruit, just as your dharma will. And the other person's adharma will bear fruit also. You know, and so in the long term, everything gets its just rewards. That's why once Swamiji said, I think I might have shared this in class, I think, said, you know, we get what we deserve. We get what we deserve, and so we accept that as Ishwar Prasad, you know. And it's an attitude of recognizing the infinite order that extends in terms of time way beyond this one lifetime of the jiva. This is one lifetime of beginningless lifetimes. And this particular lifetime, I'm reaping a certain amount of karma that will take me from this life to that life, to this death. And after that, it continues. I'll take another birth and another birth and another birth. Now, when I'm talking like that, all the while I'm totally identified with myself as a jiva who is a karta, a doer, who is accruing karma. But what about when I recognize who I really am? The Atma that is not accruing punya or papa at all and never has at any time. What about when the ahankara now is no longer, in this life itself, the ahankara, the I notion, is no longer identified with the body, mind, sense organs, but is identified with the Atma, which is akarta, not a doer, not an enjoyer, but is kutastha, which is absolutely changeless, and is the very swarupa that has for its very nature the ananda that I seek in the creation. When the jiva has recognized that I am in fact changeless and I am the ananda that it has been looking for in samsara, then the attachment on the part of the mind is always for ananda. Even for the ajnani, it's always for ananda. The what I am going for in life at all times is ananda. I am not seeking sorrow. I have nivritti. I am going away from sorrow and toward ananda. But the problem is for the samsari is the ananda is elusive. I project onto an object, there's my ananda, I go after it, I get the object, I have a glimpse of ananda, and within a few minutes, it's gone. I'm stuck with the object, the ananda is gone. Right? So I'm elusive, I'm chasing the ananda, believing that it exists in the samsara, to finally recognize, to finally find its swarup, where it is, which is my own being. Once the mind discovers that I am the ananda, the kutastha atma, the changeless atma is the ananda, and all of the pratibandhakas, all of the emotional lag time, all of the habitual going out into the world, this is the ananda, this is the ananda, when all of that drops off over time as my mind matures, now the mind sits with the ananda because that's what the mind naturally does. Even for an ajnani, it's continually only searching for ananda. Now it's found it. Now it sits there. Now the body drops. The prarabdha is over. What's going to happen to the mind? Is it going to go attach itself to the body or to the ahankara? Is it going to attach itself to mitya? It itself is mitya. Is it going to attach to mitya? Is it going to attach to this ajnanam, the object that doesn't have the ananda? Or does it resolve into the ananda? The Shastra says it, the ahankar itself resolves into the atma, where it already is resolved. And so because of that, this atma has never transmigrated at any time. It is always kutastha, I am always the same. And when this prarabdha is over, there's no ajnanam, there's to give, to create, or to maintain an ahankara, an I notion. The I notion is already resolved into the Atma as its truth. When this prarabdha is over, there's nothing to continue. And so I just remain as I am, as Ishwara in fact, and there is no more transmigration for me. So that's why he says, I don't come back again. Because of the recognition, because of the identification, the ajnanam is gone. There is no ahankara to attach to the transmigrating karyakarana sangata, the body-mind complex, searching after ananda. And so that core of that ajnanam is gone, and so there is no jiva left. No karyakarana sangata, there's no body-mind complex left. Right? Because the prarabdha is over and there's no core of ajnanam there from the standpoint of that jiva. So that jiva is no longer there. You know, it's like, imagine like this. You're in a dream, okay? Just imagine you're having a dream. And you are a character in a dream, right? And then in this dream, right, you gain knowledge in the dream. Gaining knowledge, you're walking around in your dream, recognizing that it is a dream and recognizing that I'm the whole, but I still have the body, mind, sense organs there. Now, when this dream body, dream character dies, what is left? The dream. But there's no transmigration for that dream character. Okay, this is what I want you to try to have this vision. The dream character is gone. Right? Because there's no ajnanam for there to be any transmigration. But the dream came from you. Right? It's your dream. It came from you. It is sustained by you. And it goes back into you. Clear? If you have a dream, it comes from you, sustained by you, goes back into you. All right for everybody? Now here's the dream. Within this dream, you, your dream character in the dream, you gain knowledge. Go through your prarabdha, the karmas that brought you here, you die. What is left? The atma and the dream. The dream character has died within the dream, right? See that? The dream character has died within the dream. The dream isn't over yet. The dream character exists within the dream, was born in the dream, grew up in the dream, dies in the dream. Okay? So now the dream character has died. But the dream character got knowledge. The dream guru gave that dream character knowledge. But that dream character has died in the dream still is. So now what is my experience? My experience is me in the dream. There's no jiva there. There's just Ishwara. Right? No jiva. You see that? That jiva is gone. But what is my experience? My experience is the whole. I am the whole. I am Ishwara. But that jiva that gained knowledge is no more. All of the other jivas are. But if they get knowledge, then that jiva is no more either. Now say, let's look at it like this. Here's the dream. And there's a group of jivas in the dream, including me. And they've got a guru. And in that group, 10 people gain knowledge, jnana-nishtha. And then they drop off one by one, they die. Okay. Now, as each one of those jivas that is now a jivan-mukta goes through its life and dies, number one dies, what is left? Ishwara. Number two dies, what is left? Ishwara, the dream. Number three dies, what is left? Ishwara. Because what is the truth of it, of each one of those dream characters? It's me. And whose dream is it? My dream. If the dream comes from me, is sustained by me, and goes back into me. When the dream is here, there are an infinite number of jivas. Some of those jivas are liberated. That means from the standpoint of that given jiva, there is no more reincarnation. There is just me, the whole, who am Ishwara. So like that, from this creation comes from me, Brahman, is sustained by me, resolves back into me. When this creation is here, some jivas gain knowledge, and that gaining of knowledge removes the jivatvam from the jiva. Right? So that character, when the prarabdha runs out, is no more. So what is left? There's no jiva experience for that character. But what is left? Is Ishwara, the whole. And I am that whole. No longer seen through the limited mind and sense organs of the upadi, right? That perception from that given upadi is not there. But the perception that is there is just the perception, the Ishwartvam of Ishwara. Just like the dream. So to kind of understand it. Now, look at this. To really kind of wrap your head around this. Say in the dream, if you have a dream, when in the dream, we don't have to think about knowledge right now, but in the dream, when you're having a dream, when you are identified with a character in the dream, you're perceiving the dream from the eyes and mind of the character, right? If you're identified with the character, you're perceiving the dream from the vantage point of the knower, the character in the dream. If in the dream, whenever, it could be the same dream, you're not identified with a character, then that character, even if it's you, but you're not identified with it, you know, then that character, along with all other characters, are known to you, you're identified with the whole. Right? You're not identified with any given part, you're identified with the whole dream. It's like your swarupa is the whole. And then you can go back in the dream and identify with a character, then you're looking at the dream from the eyes and mind of the character. Character is gone, then you're just the whole. So what I'm saying is that you are simultaneously, in fact, Ishvara and the jiva. But when the jiva is there, because the jiva has sense organs and mind, it is perceiving the creation from the sense organ and mind that reflect it. So as long as that jiva is there, it's having its own experience. Right? Even though, I mean, it's maya, it's part of the maya, and the consciousness, the me, the I that it enjoys, is the one I that illumines the whole thing. So in that recognition, then I, this individual Atma that I have taken to belong to the body, I recognize as Brahman. The self, the same self, I recognize to be Brahman, the self which is the self of the whole. And so in that recognition then I become the one, I recognize myself as the one who is free of all of these states of experience, beyond all of these states of experience, and that one that I've recognized doesn't come back again. In fact, has never come in the first place. It's been constant. Putesta. Okay? We better stop there. This is really, really nice. It's going to go on a little bit, so, but I think our time's up, so we'll stop. Let's take a minute. Purnamidah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
I was curious about this, that is there a way you can tell where your identity is landing on the self or on the upadhi? I mean, is there distinguishing characteristics in that identity? I mean,
because once you recognize yourself, then it's the self is not away from the upadhi. It's the very self of the upadhi.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the one, the conscious being that's not changing, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're recognizing the constant,
mm-hmm.
right, then that's yourself. If you're hooked on to the changing experience,
mm-hmm.
then the ahankara is, that's the hridayagrantihi, that's the, means the ahankara is identified with a changing experience and taking the I experience to be one with the changing experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you have this identity simultaneous with both?
Well,
I mean, yeah.
The thing is that the thought and the self are there at the same time. The thought and the emotion are there at the same time.
Right.
But who are you?
I'm the one that lights it up. But the changes are going on, and they belong to me also.
Well, the changes are going on, but they're not changing you.
No.
Right? The experiences are there, right? But you're the one that's constant in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and that's where the ahankara is. But what happens is, because experiences can be very painful, you know, life is painful. And because it's painful and hurts, it's natural for the mind to hook on to the hurt.
Pays attention
to the hurt. That's why it's so important in terms of this knowledge, is to learn how to pay attention to the hurt, to care for the hurt in a way that is true to your knowledge. You know, so that the hurt or the anger or whatever these things are that are taking place, you know how to be with those things, you know, in a way that gives you nishta, and so that these things are held by your knowledge in a way that's healing for them. You know, rather than looking at these things as something that obstruct your knowledge or take away your knowledge, your buddhi learns how to be with those things in a way that can allow them to grow and to mature and to work through the different problems, so that it's not negating your knowledge. Otherwise, you know, every time you have a bad thought, I have to wait for that thought to go so I can have knowledge again. Or we look at these as pratibandhikas, that actually, it's a misunderstanding of pratibandhika jnanam, in fact, is where you think that the pratibandhika, right, is something that takes away my knowledge. You know, or let me put it like this. This thought or this emotion, when this is there, then I am not with myself. Right? If this thought is there or this emotion is there, then myself is being obstructed or being covered. But what we need to be able to do is recognize myself there in the midst of that thought or in the midst of that emotion. And then the buddhi needs to, you know how to be with that hurt, you know, or that reaction, or that problem.
So it's not problematic then. I mean, having problems.
You're handling the problem. Just like if you have a child that is hurt or has a problem, then you, as the good mother or father, you come in and are with that child to help it through that hard time. So your buddhi is the one that has the knowledge, right? And it has to know how to come in and help the manas, help the mind through that hard time. Because you have to, it's just not realistic to think that in this Kali Yuga, you know, that we don't have trauma or problems or hurts or even ways of being in the world that are problematic and cause pain.
Mm-hmm.
We cause pain by our upbringing, and then the way we are now in the world causes pain also. And so all of this has to all unwind. Right? It has to transform itself. It has to change. And it transforms itself and changes in light of my knowledge, the one who has knowledge. But say your knowledge isn't thorough enough for you to understand, your Vedanta is not thorough enough to for the buddhi to know that it actually, you know, needs to take care of the manas, the mind that is carrying all of this baggage, and to know how to be with it so that it can work through all of this stuff. And that's all part of it.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, the manas of the jiva, manas means that the mind is carrying all the baggage and all the problems and whatnot. That's all Ishvara. It's all part of Ishvara. It's not outside of Ishvara. You know, and so the buddhi needs to, in understanding that I am the whole, or that the whole is Ishvara, needs to include the manas. You know, and then have that karma yoga attitude, that prasada buddhi, and know the tricks of the trade in terms of psychology, how to talk to that inner child. You know, in a way that it can relax and mature. I think one of the best examples is, at least, to internalize your, internalized Swamiji, because in my relationship with him, as I was growing up with him in my 20s, that kindness, you know, I learned that kindness from him on the outside, you know, and then you can internalize that kindness you learn, because you know how healing it is. Whether it's Swamiji or anybody, kindness is healing. And so anytime you've experienced kindness in the world, you know how healing it is, how it makes you feel. But, you know, it's magical, you know. And so now that recognition of the strength, of the power of kindness in the world, you now recognize, the buddhi recognizes how to treat your own mind with that type of care and that type of kindness, that type of understanding, that type of wanting to help.
Love.
Yeah, it's not about being... like spoiling yourself. Oh, you know, she's so kind, she just spoils her children rotten. That's not kindness. Kindness means wanting to help. And also that holding in high regard. And all these types of, you know, where you love the person and you respect the person and you think they're a good person. You see the goodness. You know, and then you, if there's a problem, you try to help, but you're helping somebody that you see the goodness. And so that has to be turned inward. Or you might be having a problem, or maybe you did the wrong thing, or you're hurting this way, or you screwed up in this way, or whatever. But the one inside of you that's dealing with that person sees the good person. The one who was really trying, who really means well, that, and you want to help that person. It gives the benefit of the doubt. And then there's such an inner space and relaxation that's created. You know, and that's something to work on, and it's not that hard to do, because everybody's experienced kindness, and you've experienced yourself as being kind to another, or to your pets, or to your children, or to your friends, or to your, you know, clients. You have that in yourself, and you've received it, and so it's not unknown territory. It's just that so often has not been directed inward. But it's not that all the components you don't know, you know. And so when it is directed inward, the parts that receive that are so grateful. There's an immediate reward. It's like somebody loves me. You know? There's somebody who's giving me the benefit of the doubt. There's somebody who cares, really cares. And that's a wonderful thing, because you have more control over that person inside than you do of the world. In the world, you can't count on that positive, you know, that consistency. But you can have that inside. And then it creates like a space inside for these hurts and wounds to drop off. You know, the accumulated problems. And that's the mind settles down. In the light of your knowledge, the mind settles down, because in fact the Atma doesn't have a problem. Ananda doesn't have a problem. Doesn't come and go. You know, so what has a problem is the aftermath that even the jnani gets knowledge. Swamiji used the example, you know, the tenth man story. The tenth man, thinking that the tenth man is drowned in the river, is so distraught that he bangs his head on the tree. His head's all bruised and bloody and everything, and then he finds out, oh, the tenth man isn't drowned in the water. Everything's fine. There's no problem. But now he's got this big gash in his head, and that gash has got to, it takes time for it to heal. Yeah. So here now we discover, oh, all's well, but we have all these gashes, these emotional gashes, you know. And so now we have to heal them. So the tenth man, he's got to go and, you know, put some antiseptic on his forehead and bandage it and take care of it and everything until it gets well.
Nothing wrong with the tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Carol, you gave the example of how in the dream there are people and then one person gets jnanam or is taught. Then why can't God make us all ready-made with jnanam?
Good question. But the thing is then you're thinking that God created himself.
God created God. The word.
So, no, it's like that God is what? It's Brahman.
Okay.
Brahman, who has never done anything.
Oh.
Brahman is just pure being, okay? Non-dual.
Mm-hmm.
So for Brahman hasn't decided, let's do this or let's do that. Right? Because that's all Maya.
Mm. Oh,
okay. Okay, so now, so Brahman hasn't done anything to decide how the creation is going to be. Now the question is, all right, but Maya, did Maya decide how the creation is going to be?
Mm.
Yes or no? Because now this is the problem. Was there a beginning to Maya? You say, how could there be a beginning to Maya? Who was going to begin it? So the Maya itself, the cyclical creation, also has no beginning. And what is Ishvara? Brahman is the self, plus this manifestation is what we call Ishvara. But the manifestation, Ishvara, Brahman is changeless. There's no time. Ishvara, the Maya, Upadi, the manifestation, the creation, resolution, manifestation, resolution, that's beginningless. Right? So then, where was the beginning for Ishvara to say, let's make it like this? So when you think of Ishvara as the creator of the creation, that's a misnomer in a way. Because Ishvara himself was not created. Right? Ishvara is. And how is Ishvara? Like this. So then you say, well, why didn't Ishvara do it like this? Well, because he didn't. Because it's not like that. You know? But then say if you go into it in another way, well, what if he did do it like that? Then there wouldn't be any jiva. I mean, the creation would be, it would be something else.
Yes.
There wouldn't be any jiva.
Yes.
There wouldn't be any knowledge.
Mm.
There wouldn't be any bondage. There wouldn't be any liberation. There wouldn't be any knowledge. There wouldn't be any Vedas. There would be something else.
Well, you want to see that Ishvara is is kind and moral and good. You know, too.
Yeah, but that's why the Christians divided Ishvara into two: God and Satan. Right? Because they want only a benign God.
Yeah.
Right. But then, what are you going to do with all the evil? You have to put it somewhere. What are you going to do with the darkness? So let's split Ishvara into half. you know, we won't call it Ishwara. Let's split the God into half, where we have the nine good God, and then we've got Satan holding all of the evil. And now when you have that kind of a situation, then what happens when you have an evil thought? Who's behind the evil thought?
Satan.
Who's behind the good thought? God. So that's why Jimmy Carter had such a terrible time when he had an adulterous thought, because he was a good Baptist. He had an adulterous thought. And he felt horrible because of that, because that is Satan. Is causing that thought. So he has to try to get rid of Satan. It goes on and on, these kind of problems. But here, we don't think of Ishwara in terms of good and evil. Brahman is not good or evil. Brahman is Ananda. Brahman is pure conscious being, which is infinite. Ananda, infinite wholeness. That's your nature. And the Maya Upadhi is made of all of the opposites in infinite direction. There's no limitation. It's infinite. And in that infinite order, it goes from light to dark. Right? The whole spectrum of emotion goes from heaven to hell.
So wanting, you know? So having the feeling, wanting the darkness not to be.
You want to protect yourself from the darkness. And that's why we're always evoking Ishwara, we're evoking Dharma, we're evoking the laws to stay on the side, you know, of Ananda. To try to behave in the creation in such a way that we don't evoke the painful side.
You know? Why is the, if Ishwara didn't create the creation, then why is the creation called the creation? Why is it called that?
Well, that's the English translation of it. Mm. But in Sanskrit, it's not called the creation.
Mm. Mm.
You know, it's called the Vishwa, which means the manifestation of everything.
Mm.
Or it's called the Prapancha, the five elements.
But I believe that Swamiji uses the word creation.
So do I.
Yeah. But so then I'm wondering why.
But he'll also say there is no creation.
What does that mean?
Well, when it means this, that when you say creation, you believe that there's a creator who is separate from the creation.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like there was a God up in heaven, for instance, who then decided, let me create the world. Mm. So God becomes the creator, and then he created the world out of something.
Mm-hmm.
But that creator-created duality isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
The creation, instead, is more like a manifestation. Like, say, if I say, imagine a meadow, right? The meadow, imagination, with the sky and all that, is the creation. But is there a creator? Is there somebody that came along and built the sky? And built, you know?
Yeah.
So we use the word creation, but then we have to redefine the word.
Yeah.
And Swamiji has often said there is no creation.
Right. But when he says that, he doesn't mean Mithya is not existent.
No, he doesn't. He means that there's not an act of a creator creating a creation.
Right.
You know? Now, if the Christians even get into this type of situation, now I'm going to, like, St. Thomas Aquinas, where God created the world. And in fact, in all of the religions, we look at God as omniscient, omnipotent, and as the creator of the creation, right? But then the question comes in, is, well, if God created the world, where did he get the material to create the world? Because if the material was already there, then who created that material? So if you're saying God created the world, he had to create all the material. Well, that means the material wasn't there. So how did God create this world without any material?
Himself.
Creatio ex nihilo means God created the creation out of nothing, which is like our maya. You say maya, yama iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. It means that this creation has no being of its own, right? So when they say the creatio ex nihilo, they don't really know what to do with that. But there can't be a separate material away from that's other than God to create the creation.
So why did they say, if you don't mind just going over that again, that which is not is Maya? Because that's a little confusing.
No, because but you have to, all statements have to be unfolded.
Right.
So they take Maya, mm-hmm. Maya, mm-hmm. iti, Maya, so Yama iti Maya, that which is not, that is Maya. That means mm-hmm. that which has no being of its own.
I see. It doesn't mean, again, that it's non-existent.
That's right.
I see.
Because if we say non-existent, we break down experience into the three categories.
Not tucham.
Tucham. Tucham means that which never was. Not even experience, like the horn of a rabbit, or the son of a barren woman, or the city in the sky. Those are the stock examples for that which simply is not. But Maya is. I mean, we experience Maya.
But in the conscious being is non-dual, and it's awareness. There's no creation in...
Not from just the standpoint of awareness.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But this creation is nothing but awareness. Like the waves are nothing but water.
Yeah, okay.
This creation, this duality that we experience has an order to it. It is here. It comes and goes. So we can't say it's non-existent. We can't say it's, you know, absolute existence, satyam, you know. And so we have to account for it. But if we were to say, well, what is its being here? The being is Brahman. It has no being of its own. That's why when we go to analyze this creation, you can't find anything here. You find our names. But the names break down into smaller names. We see this thing here, this stand. Stand is a name. But the stand, named stand, can be broken into smaller things like plastic piece and platform and wood, and you know. Those are names. And those names can be broken into smaller names, names of smaller things. So there really is no thing, there's just names. If you try to actually find a thing, you can't.
But the one constant
is the existence.
Right. That's sort of like what you try to arrive at. I mean, why? What you do arrive at
is that what is the thing?
Right.
What we call the vastu.
Yeah.
What is actually here is its being, satchit itself.
Right. Right. So all the while you're breaking things down, the being is constant.
Yeah. I think we should call it a night because I'm meeting somebody now.
I really appreciated you talking about the Buddhi holding the manas tonight.
The what?
Buddhi holding the manas.
Oh, yeah.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have you ever heard of deism?